Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a fun one. I got with me Jimmy Patton. And Jimmy is with the founding partner and CEO of Patton, Albertson, and Miller. Welcome, Jimmy.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, Jimmy, can you tell us a little bit about Patton, Albertson, and Miller? How are you serving folks?
Well, we are a fee-only registered investment advisory firm. And what that means is we do comprehensive, wealth management services, primarily for high net worth clients.
Now, high net worth clients, how do you define that?
Well, typically we work with someone who's got $1 million or more to invest. That's not a hard and fast rule. We have some clients who have less than that, but that's generally how we define it.
And then when you say to invest, that's not their house, per se?
And that's correct. That's investable assets, assets that can be invested in the markets.
And then are they typically corporate-type people that just have amassed that in their 401k and then they're retired and then they come to you? Or is this, do you work with business owners that are, kind of growing a business and they are looking to work with you guys?
Yeah, we work with all of the above. We work with retirees. We work with people who have saved money over a long career, the corporate types, as you call them. But it could also be people who made money the old fashioned way. They inherited it.
So you have, that's a portion of your business as well.
Sure. We work primarily with individuals and families.
Uh-huh. So when you work with a family, this was curious, to me, I read recently that the vast majority of, younger people, when the parent dies and that had the wealth, they don't stick with the same wealth management company that the parents had. And it was like two-thirds. I was, like, shocked.
Yeah, that's correct. It's one of the challenges in our industry. And I think it's a couple of reasons. One is that advisors don't do a good job of connecting to that next generation. Mm-hmm. And they have to understand that their client is not just mom and dad, but it's also, children, grandchildren, right, and so forth. And then I think another issue in our industry is the average financial advisor is 58 years old. Mm-hmm. And so there's a little bit of a disconnect between, right, generations. And so, in fact, I just read an article recently about this very topic. And so while I grew up using certain analogies, you have to use things that mean something to,
right,
your audience. Right.
Right.
If I pull out an Andy Griffith.
Right. They may not even
know who Andy Griffith is. Right. That might be a bad example. Everybody knows who Andy Griffith is, but you get the point.
Right. So now, have you started putting things in place in your firm to kind of address that?
Yeah. So what we do is, one, we have two advisors on every relationship, mm-hmm, and that does two things. One is, if something happens to the lead advisor, there's somebody else there that's familiar, can step right in. Number two is, it's typically a senior advisor, more experienced, shall we say. I won't say they're old,
right,
more experienced. And then you have a younger advisor, and then that allows a little more of a connection with that younger generation. So those are the kinds of things we're doing. And then also you have to, encourage those younger clients, that next generation, to come in and have conversations about financial advisory
and just
issues.
Even financial literacy, I would think, too.
That's right.
Like, I know I'm older, and my wife is older and nearing retirement, and we probably fit the profile of your clients. But I have a kid that's 21, and I have a financial advisor. She never asks about him. Even if she would do something as simple as, hey, why don't we set your kid up with one of those automatic set-it-and-forget-it index fund apps?
Mm-hmm.
Because I did that for my kid, and it's like, just to get him in the habit of saving where he's not thinking about it. But that little action, whether she made a dollar or not, would help bond her to him, I would think, over the long haul.
Sure.
Because at some point he's going to get all of it.
Well, what we're trying to do is cradle-to-grave service. And so no matter what stage of life, you know, we try to explain it this way. Everybody is on a financial journey.
Right.
Just like if we went out there on the interstate, there's thousands of cars out there. Some of them are going to take their kids to school. Some are going to work. Some are going to Orlando to go to Disney World. Everybody's got their own unique destination. And they need someone who can guide them. And in the car, what you do is you pull out your phone and you turn on Waze.
Right.
Waze tells you where to turn.
Exactly.
Tells you what speed limit is, where the cops are, all kinds of information. But Waze is a, you know, a guide.
Right.
The same way goes in our business. We are a Waze for people on a financial journey.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether it's a young, you know, college student, or even before, whether you're trying to instill a discipline of saving money for your children, young children, or whether it's someone who's already retired and is just their key issue is not running out of money, and everything in between, that's what we're trying to do, is be that, you know, guide on this financial journey. And so it doesn't matter where you are in the process.
Right.
You know, we're going to tailor our services to your situation.
Right, but your firm specializes in people that have amassed some wealth. Like, you're not typically interested in my kid that makes, you know, 10 grand a year working part-time somewhere.
We look at it on a household basis. We don't just look at individuals.
Right.
We look at the
family. You're investing in the family, really.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
That's correct.
And then, so how did you get into this line of work? Has this been your career, your whole career?
I started in banking.
Uh-huh.
Had two associates that back in 2003, we thought there was kind of an opportunity to start a boutique wealth management firm. We thought larger banks were largely not providing the kind of service that we felt people needed and deserved. So, long story short, we left the bank, started this firm in 2003. So, I've been in financial services my whole career.
Right.
Patton Albertson Miller's been around since 2003.
And then for you, has this been more rewarding to be on this side of it?
Absolutely. You know, big organizations kind of institutionalize decision making.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been rewarding for us to be at the smaller end, be entrepreneurial, be able to spend more time with a particular client and not get overwhelmed by, you know, scale.
Right.
Scale is an enemy of good service.
Is that what you've learned over the years?
Yeah, it is.
It sounds good on the spreadsheet, but you know, in real life, it doesn't work as well, I don't think.
Yeah.
So now for you, when you're working with talk me through like what happens, like you're onboarding a new client. Somebody comes to you guys and says, hey, Jimmy, we need some help. I would imagine that the people you work with, they already had some financial advisor in the past and they're switching to you. Is that accurate? Or
sometimes you'd be surprised.
Really? That people have $1 million and they've just done it quietly?
Some of it have been doing the Home Depot plan, do it yourself.
Really?
Yeah, you know, it's a mixture. But, you know, sometimes we are, you know, taking over a relationship from another advisor. But it really doesn't matter. Either way, we're going to go through the same process. Mm-hmm. And that process is really to take a full financial inventory of, you know, where are you today?
So you're looking at all the accounts, where the money, the little piles here and there, which they probably accumulated.
We're asking them to provide us with a lot of information about their financial life, including accounts, as you spoke of, the planning documents, their will, their advanced directive, durable powers of attorney. We're asking them to provide us with insurance policies so that we can assess what gaps they may have in their, you know, risk management. We basically ask tax returns, everything, to get an accurate picture of where they are today. And then there's got to be a conversation about what is that destination? Where am I going? And then we start coming up with, you know, recommendations and strategies to get them from where they are today to where they want to go.
So now, so your objective, I guess, would be to be the trusted advisor that is the quarterbacking kind of their financial health?
Exactly.
So in order to do that, you have to know the whole picture. It can't just be like this little corner of the
That's
sandbox, right.
Right? It'd be like going to the doctor and saying,
just look at my arm.
Doctor,
look at my heart.
my thumb hurts. Right. You know, there's got to be a little more.
Right.
The doctor's going to look, take
Everywhere.
Your blood pressure,
right.
your temperature, you know, maybe even take an x-ray. Same way with us.
So now when you're working with your clients, are you kind of customizing a plan just for them, like that Jimmy is kind of working up with on the blackboard there?
Exactly. As I said earlier, everybody's got a different destination.
Right.
So if you came into me and I was a travel agent and I gave every client an itinerary to go to Paris, that may not work for somebody who doesn't want to go to Paris.
But that's a lot of firms do it that way. Kind of they chunk you and they put you in kind of a general plan.
They do. I mean, you know, there's a lot of planning software out there where you can, you know, change
right.
some of the assumptions and things like that. But that deep conversation at the beginning where we really find out everything there is to know, that's all the basis of a customized plan
mm-hmm.
is until I know everything there is to know about you financially, there may be some issue there that has an impact on your financial journey. And if I don't know that, I can't create a plan to deal with it.
Now, how do you kind of measure their risk tolerance?
A couple of ways. We do, you know, we'll send them a questionnaire, and, you know, ask them all the normal questions. You know, if you woke up one morning and your investments were down 20%, how would you feel? So that's part of it.
Is that people give you the truth there? Because it sounds good. Yeah, I'll be good.
Yeah.
And then when it happens, like it happened recently, you're
yeah.
so nobody called you and they were like, I was good. I told you I'd be good.
The questionnaire is the science. The art is exactly what you're talking about, is that sometimes people will say one thing, and that's just part of the experience of mm-hmm. having done this for a long time. And looking for cues where people's conversation doesn't quite line up.
Doesn't match.
Yeah.
Now, is there ever a portfolio that you build for someone that includes, like, high-risk things like cryptocurrencies or like, owning your own business is, to me, a speculative operation for a lot of people?
Yeah. So we don't we look at – again, your entire financial
right.
picture. So if you've got a lot of risk because you own a business and every day, you know, you're on the cusp of,
right.
you know, financial ruin, then we're going to take your investable assets
and put in more
and be more conservative with
right.
it. So, again, we're taking a broad view of
right.
it. We would probably never put anything in cryptocurrencies.
Too speculative.
Well, it's a speculative.
Right.
It's not an investment. It's speculative.
Right.
You may have more fun going to Vegas and playing roulette
right.
or something.
I'm sure you have clients that do that.
Sure.
But put that under entertainment or just.
Yeah. So what we would do is we would kind of assess how much money do you need in order to meet your financial goals. And if there's some overfunding or some extra money and you want to go play around with that, maybe we call it the mad money account,
mm-hmm.
Then we'll set up a separate account and say, okay, you know, we'll help you, but you kind of invest in the things that you would kind of like to hit grand slams with.
Now, for you, do you work with, like, professional athletes, celebrities, people like that, or do you tend to work with, like, regular people who have just slowly amassed wealth?
We tend to work with regular folk.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because I would imagine they have different challenges.
They do, and I think what you find is most professional athletes or entertainers, so much of situation is tied up in contracts, that they're going to use an attorney as their lead advisor, and then go hire people on the team for a specific piece of that. Typically, an attorney is going to serve as their quarterback, not a financial advisor.
So now, how do you work with the CPAs and the accountants?
So we work with each client's team of professionals. If somebody comes in and says, I want to do business with you, we don't say, okay, well, you got to use this accountant, tax lawyer.
So you're accountant agnostic.
We're agnostic to other professionals. We will work with who the client wants us to work with. Now, if we get in a situation where we think they're being ill-served,
you'll let them
we will take them aside and say, you know, you may want to consider making a change here, but I don't think that's seldom happened in our experience.
And then so when you work with them, so you're the quarterback, though, of kind of you're the CFO of the family-ish?
Yeah, I would say that, but I want to be careful not to give the idea that we're in charge. Because what we're doing is we're serving, and we are not there to replace the attorney. We're not going to, you know, we're trying to facilitate conversations and help the client understand that for this particular issue, you need to go talk to your attorney, or we need to get some advice from your CPA. It's directing traffic. Sometimes I explain it like this. If you are building a building, you got a general contractor. But that general contractor doesn't do the plumbing, the roof, and all that. You have other subcontractors to come in and make sure everything gets built on time. But that general contractor is kind of overseeing the project. That's an analogy of kind of how we work as that quarterback.
But you're kind of watching the back for the client.
That's right. We sit on the same side of the table as the client.
Right, because you're paid a fee. You're fee only?
Yes, we're a fee-only firm, and it can be one of two ways. It's either based on money that we have under management, or if we don't have money under management, then it's a negotiated fee, maybe a monthly fixed fee.
And that way... You then participating if there's commissions on investments, or does that take that off the table?
No, we use a discount custodian, and we don't take any commissions. Those are simply pass-throughs, discount brokerage fees like you would see at Fidelity, Schwab, TD, any of those places.
Right, but that shows that you are on the same side of the client. Like, there's
no
incentive for you.
There's no financial incentive for us to make a trade.
Right.
The only way we get paid more money is if the account goes up in value.
Right, so that everybody wins.
Everybody's, you know, on the same side of the table.
So now, at what age do you recommend people start thinking about their retirement? Is this something that you got to be thinking about right when you start your career? Because today's careers are so much more volatile than maybe in the past.
They are, and all the more reason why the first day you start work is the day you ought to start thinking about it. You ought to have a plan. And, you know, time is a great friend in the retirement planning business. And if you start at 22, you can get there a lot easier than if you start at age 50. Now, we would also say today is the day to start, no matter how old you are. But if you start when you're right out of college, boy, you can get there a lot more confidently by just steady plotting, saving a little bit of money over
time.
It's that
compounding thing, huh?
That's right.
That works every time.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So now, when you're working with your clients, sometimes you have to tell them you're going to have to work longer than you anticipated, and sometimes you're saying, look, you can retire whenever you want. Like, how does that work? Those probably are tricky conversations.
Yeah, so there are levers, you know, that you can pull. And so if somebody's coming up short, you can either work longer, you can take more risk in your portfolio, you can save more money. These are all levers you can pull to get. And again, this is all math. I mean, all you're doing is saying, here's how much I need at some age certain. And so this is how much I need to accumulate between today and that point. And as far as the math goes, there's, you know, two or three different ways to get there. The best way is to spend less than you make and save over a long period of time.
Right. If you do those two things, you're almost there. Right?
It's a foolproof method unless you go out and make bad investments.
Now, for you, how do you go about getting these clients? Is it by word of mouth, like you have happy clients that tell their friends? Because I would think that that, again, is a tricky thing because a lot of people are weird about money and they don't like to talk about it.
Yeah, we don't ask for referrals. We used to, but what we found is that people really don't like to be asked, hey, can you give me five names of people I should know?
Right.
And so what we try to do is when you're at home on the couch with your brother-in-law and he's complaining about, gosh, the market's been so volatile,
right,
then you talk about Jimmy Patton and what he's done for you. And that's what I call a referable moment.
Right.
But I'm not even in the room.
Right.
And so we do that through providing great service and helping people achieve what they're trying to accomplish, and then, you know, when the opportunity comes up, we hope they mention our name.
Now, in your mind, what is a typical retirement age in today's world? Are people working like till they're 70 and 80, or are people retiring in 30s?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally speaking, people are working longer. Part of that is because people are healthier longer. Mm-hmm. But I think also, you know, a generation ago or two, you know, you had a pension, you had, you know, kind of that corporate benevolence that kind of took care of you. People are responsible for their own retirement now through 401k plans and their own saving. And I think generally speaking, people are not saving enough. And so one of those levers that we talked about a few minutes ago is to work longer. Mm-hmm. I think some people are doing that.
And then if somebody wanted to learn more about your firm, where should they go? Is there a website? Or I'm sure you're on all the social medias.
Yeah, we are. PattonAlbertsonMiller.com or PamWealth.com. Either one of those will get you right to our website.
Well, good stuff, Jimmy Patton. Thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you, Lee.
All right. This is Lee Cantor. We'll see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.